So welcome back to Hashtag Black. This is where we hash out the hashtags that frame Black lives. My name is Stephanie Shonikon. I teach at the University of Missouri in the Department of Black Studies and the School of Music, and I chair the Department of Black Studies. So every week or so, I bring together some of our students to talk about some of the trending hashtags that have been going around. And this week is a good one because we have some really interesting topics to discuss. If you are new to Hashtag Black, we invite you to check out our podcast on SoundCloud at Hashtag Black on SoundCloud. And then please follow us on Twitter, Podcast Black. So let's get started with quick introductions of my students who are here today, names and majors, starting over here.
Marshall Allen, double majoring in Black Studies and Political Science.
Deja Mackey, majoring in Black Studies, minoring in Women's and Gender Studies.
Ida Campbell-Jones, majoring in Black Studies and possibly minoring in Political Science.
Possibly. All right, guys. So today we are going to do four or five hashtags. Let's go ahead and start with two that are really on my mind. And one of the things that people don't always think about when they think of Black Studies is that we study Africa as well. So our first two hashtags are going to be based on news that's coming out of Africa, both really disturbing. But let's go ahead and start with hashtag Mugabe. And this is about the recent resignation of Robert Mugabe from the presidency of Zimbabwe. He was president for 37 years and gathered quite a reputation, and he finally stepped down on November 22nd. So I asked you all to kind of think about it. What does this mean? And so on. What do you all think about that? Deja.
Yes, I was going to say, I guess I'll go first. So I didn't know about this. So I looked it up, and immediately what came to mind, I was reading a lot of personal stories from Zimbabwe residents. A woman who was saying, my six-month-old daughter will be able to live in a freer Zimbabwe. People saying that we're excited for new blood. And one man saying, I'm 36 and I've only known one ruler my whole life. So it made me think about the types of ways that he could have conditioned the people who live in Zimbabwe to think, which automatically made me think about Donald Trump. And I'm like, What is it like to be under someone's rule for so long? Just because every single day in Trump's America is so daunting, it feels like 3 days to me. It just got me thinking about the ways that someone who's in power can condition people to think differently in a negative way or a positive way.
Mm-hmm. He was seen as a hero when he first took over. I mean, he brought Zimbabwe with some other freedom fighters to freedom, to independence from England in 1980, very long awaited freedom and independence. And so he was seen as a real hero at the time, but over the 37 years of power, I guess that can do something to people. Marshall, any thoughts? What have you learned?
So the first thing that I thought was important to look at, which was why everything was so all the controversy originally surrounded, was first and foremost the biometric voter registration. So that was the first thing that popped up when you think about him in general. So the initial surrounding of this voter registration came from it started in 2013. That was as far back as I decided to go. It was 2013 when they were talking about how they believed, his name was Leo Sindrowicz, wrote an article about how millions of the people believed that they were just contributing to a higher scheme, mm-hmm. or that they were falling or placing themselves under the rule, knowingly or unknowingly, based off of voting. So that was the first reason why the voter registration decided to come up. 3 years fast forwarding, they lose a $1 billion in corruption. That's what is reported. losing at least $1 billion annually to corruption, police, local governments, and stuff like that, and that they were ranked 150 out of 168 on the Transparency International Index, and that measures perceptions of corruption. Mm-hmm. Fast forwarding again, we'll skip what he's looked at, but. So there's this thing called the GAN Corruption Report, mm-hmm. and they talk about like the corruption of a country. They're usually for businesses, and they measure the corruption of businesses on an international level. But their snapshot in May 2016 says that across all sectors, corruption is very high in Zimbabwe, which is why the resignation of Mugabe mm-hmm. and the biometric voter registration was so crucial to the understanding mm-hmm. of their situation. So... as of right now, Zimbabwe is considered a failed state. Mm-hmm. And in political science, when you're considered a failed state, like literally, like when you're considered a failed state, ally nations, neighboring nation states, and the international realm in general pretty much sees you as no longer having the capacity to lead or to govern and function mm-hmm. as a country. Mm-hmm. And so they were saying that they had found like the judicial system, the police system, public services, and even legislation all being highly corrupt. So when you look at his resignation, a lot of the controversy or a lot of the praise that came to it, especially in correlation with the biometric voter registration, was an effort to make sure that one, elections were no longer fraud, and then two, that when it did come down to voting for the future, there would be somewhat of a prevention of another Mugabe rule. Now, yes. The larger conversation to this comes into play with me, similar to Aristide in 2003 with Haiti. And it seems to me, and this is just conspiracy, of course, but it seems to me that anytime a black leader of a foreign country removes the white minority from rule, all of this negativity surrounds them right yes. after mm-hmm. that happens. So mm-hmm. they're looked at as heroes initially mm-hmm. because they removed the white minority rule. But once they remove that white minority rule, there's a whole different conversation that's to be had. Mm-hmm. And one of the articles that I read was a perfect example of this based off the adjectives that they used to describe him. So this was by Joseph Winter, and this was on the 21st, and he said, "But to his growing number of critics, this highly educated, wily politician became the caricature of an African dictator who destroyed an entire country in order to keep his job." And these are the adjectives that we see with black political leaders on an international level after removing mm-hmm. a white minority rule. And I think that's part of a larger conversation.
Oh, absolutely. I think that we definitely need to come back to this because it's so complex. As Mugabe had taken away the land, and this new guy, Mnangagwa, is thinking about paying these white farmers back. So it's very complex. This is why Black Studies is so interesting. We need to start connecting these dots as Marshall just said. He's talking about Aristide in Haiti. Moving on to our next hashtag, hashtag Libya slave trade. This is a really tough one. Ida, Libya slave trade.
I haven't been really looking at the images because it's just, it's very sickening to me, but I do think that it's important that we do speak on the slavery within the world and not just American slavery, because it's never slavery as an institution, like for with regard to Africans, has never ended. Mm-hmm. And I feel like because American slavery has ended, we tend to forget about our African brothers and sisters and the trials and tribulations that they live through. Mm-hmm. And we need to get back into the conversation of it, because I feel like a lot of us are... even a lot of black people tend to believe that we're in a post-slavery society, and clearly we're not.
Okay, and you refuse to look at those images. Those images are very hard to look at. And so we're talking about thousands of African migrants that leave West Africa in their quest to go to Europe, and they are kept in Libya under very awful conditions, and they're actually auctioned out. So
I did see a video.
The video is chilling. Deja, have you looked at the images?
I've looked at them in the way that you look at things when you scroll through Twitter, and you decide very quickly, I'm going to click on that or I'm not going to click on that.
And what did you decide?
So I've consumed some of the images, some of the media, but similar to Ida, I was talking with my roommate about this. I think that I can't speak for all millennial folks my age, but at least for her and I, it's difficult for us to conceptualize the fact that something that we've learned about as a historical event has sprung up and is happening again. Mm-hmm. But something that I watched that I'm going to use for Dave Dunkley's historical and contemporary slavery class for our final Cardi B, she went live on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll send it to you. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, in her Cardi B way, she was critiquing the UN's involvement in everything and how the UN always, and like America, always want to stick their nose where it doesn't belong. And it's a must see. But yeah, that was my favorite Cardi B little thing thus far.
And for those of you who are listening to us who have never heard of Cardi B, I recommend that you go back to a couple hashtag blacks ago.
Two or three
ago, we did cover that. So, and also you can check her out on YouTube. But for people who think of our artists as people who don't have anything to say about social aspects of our experience, that goes against the grain for sure.
Yeah.
What about you, Marshall? Any thoughts on this? Because this is so disturbing on so many levels.
The major commentary of why it can happen based off of political analysts, stuff like that, is because since there are so many migrants that are moving from Libya into Europe, as they get seized, they're put into detention centers. Mm-hmm. And the detention centers are overflowing 400,000 plus people in one section. So as they flow, it gets pretty difficult to monitor 400,000 people within one area. And because of that, then you have the rape, and then you have the murder, and then nevertheless the slave trade, right? The issue with this, over everything, when it comes to like foreign politics, international relations, international studies, and stuff like that, is that when it comes to the international system as a whole, because a lot of the commentary was, why don't people do anything? Why does anything happen? Is that when it comes to the international system as a whole, it's considered very anarchic. Not anarchic in the sense of lawlessness, in the sense of terror, in the sense of lack of control, but anarchic in the sense that there's no international government. The United Nations is a collective of nations. It's not a ruling system. You can't be president of the United Nations, right? And so with that, the United Nations, the United States, they cannot force their will into a different country based off of how international politics works. And so with that, regardless of how everything is seen, you can have aid, you can have diplomat, you can have diplomacy, but you can't necessarily force things to change. Right. And with the ruler being left, and now with Libya also be considered a failed state, and less than 20% of their governing, less than 20% of their polity actually being within that country's governance, and then with their previous ruler, right, being kicked out, there's just so many and too many factors that really allow people to actually involve themselves in the affairs of the country.
Okay, so apart from all of that, so that's all true, but how does it make you all feel as young black people? You're all American, African-American. What are the implications of this? I mean, does it make you feel any kind of way? What Marshall is talking about is about the United Nations and the kinds of interventions that can or can't happen. That's all well and good. But what does this say about being black in the 21st century? What are your thoughts on that?
I saw something on Twitter that was like, let's just hope that the United States, like, they need to be the last ones who intervene, just because every time we intervene, we just seem to mess things up. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be very interesting for us to intervene, seeing as though, like, our president obviously has no idea, like, well, no, I don't want to say he doesn't know about race relations because he knows exactly what he's doing. Similar to what Ida was doing about, like, intentionally not consuming images, I think subconsciously I've stayed away from it just because it is so, like, I know that I'm going to get engulfed in it, mm-hmm. because it is such a harsh thing that's mm-hmm. happening. So,
yeah. All right. So I think we should just keep watching. This has been going on for 3 years at least. And this is, it's only now that international media has picked it up. Again, we need historians on our faculty in history and in Black studies that do African history, because we need to connect what's happening there to what's happening, to what happened here. And even if we connect it to incarceration rates and so on, this is a wide web of racism against Black people in across the world. So I hope we're paying attention to it. I know the images are difficult to watch, but we need to know. All right, let's move on to lighter topics. We will go straight to any thoughts on, real quick, on hashtag Meghan Markle's. Just a very quick thoughts on Meghan Markle's. Deja, what are you thinking about this?
So this makes me think about the context of race and ethnicity in America. It leaves me asking the question, who decides who's Black enough to be Black and who decides who's Black but white enough to be considered mixed? Specifically because I saw a tweet. This woman, she was saying, because everyone's saying, like, Meghan Markle's mom is a Black woman who has locks. So, like, she's about to be in the royal palace or whatever. And then someone was saying, well, her mom's actually half white. And so that makes Meghan Markle a fourth Black. So basically this is a white woman. And someone quoted that tweet. I don't think I can say the N-word on air, but said, they quoted Jay-Z's song and they said, still N-word. Like, you know, white N-word, Black N-word, you know,
the
song.
The story of OJ.
Yes, yes, yes. So just quickly, a list of celebrities who are mixed, biracial, half white, who we consider Black. Barack Obama, Drake, Bob Marley, Colin Kaepernick, Tiny, Alicia Keys, Lauren London, Halle Berry, Frederick Douglass, who was half white, mm-hmm. but we consider him Black. So there is, if y'all follow me on Twitter, at TwitterlessDeja, the Twitter's just with one T, you'll see Mizzou student, her name is Amber Ledbetter. She made a fabulous Twitter thread about, like, the thick historical intricacies of Black identity. So putting Afro in. Yeah, it was really, really dope. Talking about, like, Afro-Latinx people, Afro-Caribbean people, just the way that there was a picture, I don't think she made it, but she added it in the thread, that was, like, the only difference between, like, all of these different types of Black people were the boat stops that they got off at, which I think is very interesting to just let that sit. But mm-hmm. what mm-hmm. bothers me about Meghan Markle and the way that her Blackness is being picked apart and received on social media, it makes me go back to the Willie Lynch letter. So if you go back to the Willie Lynch letter, he talks about the way he basically, it's an instruction manual on how to keep Black people subdued. So he literally says the second way to do it is color. So you take the different shades, the different hair, he's talking about fine hair textures and thick hair textures and, like, ways that we can use color and shade to divide Black people, and it will last you throughout 300 years or even longer. And he says something that I think, I'll leave it off on this. He says, distrust is stronger than trust, and envy is stronger than adulation. Hmm. So, I mean, we're being divisive here. Mm-hmm. If we continue to pick each other apart mm-hmm. and reduce each other to haves and fourths and eights, mm-hmm. that's exactly what they want us to do.
Sure. I want to mention that the Willie Lynch letter has been contested over a period of time. So mm-hmm. there are lots of historians who have discounted it. However, there is so much There's so much truth to it that people can, like, I can look at that letter and every point seems to have lived out. So whether it's a true document or not,
but still somebody wrote it.
There is some truth to it, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's a document or not.
Right.
And I think that Deja's points we can take it all the way back to Libya. Again, you know, they're putting these men up on the auction block and saying, these are strong black men who can do work, right? So again, where is blackness? How is it constructed? And how is it that we give Meghan Markle's, at least some people are giving her the thumbs up because she's not quite black enough or she's not very, very black. But what do you say, Aida?
Well, Deja added like 10,000 times of what I was going to say. Like she said supports what I'm about to say. Number one, I love it. I'm happy because just to see that she didn't let the nasty remarks towards her that she had when they publicized themselves as a couple, like get to her and like make her like shy away from it. She's like, oh, well, you think this about me? Well, watch this. Like, I'm about to
watch
marry
I'm about to
prince.
Do.
Like, so I think that's great. And I think that I'm happy that Prince Harry found love in the form of a black woman. And I actually love the way that he supports and, like, defends her as well. Because, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do as a partner. But also his status is very influential to like the royal family and everyone that they influence because I mean he is Prince Harry but also I just find it very disheartening to see the black people in the black community, like, kind of, like, disowning her because somebody was like, y'all act like she's the blackest MF y'all ever seen. And it was, like, some type of, like, gif or whatever that was connected to it. But it's, like, she is the blackest person we've seen in the royal family aside from their servants. So it's just, it's very uplifting to see that.
Mm-hmm. Aside from their servants and all the people, the millions of people they colonized. But.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On a positive note, a funny thing that I saw about it, a bunch of GIFs of like Beyonce dressed up as the princess and everyone's like, but wait, she'll just be a duchess. And they're like, no, duchess, she'll be the black princess. And then they, someone said, nuck if you Buckingham Palace.
Yes, that was my favorite tweet.
I heard about that just yesterday.
Oh, yes, man.
That was my favorite tweet. but I think it's great. And kind of like what Deja was saying, and the way that people responded to that person's negative tweet was like, black people get mad when biracial people don't claim to be black, but when they do claim to be black, they, like, black people disown them. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't accept them in the black community. And it's just, like, this is why so many biracial people have identity crises, because they're not accepted by either side.
Yeah.
And it's just like
I feel like we could do a whole show on just that because even around this table, we are different kinds of black people, you know, African, biracial, from St. Louis, from Chicago, you know, so from Kansas City, Marshall.
That's
Kansas.
Kansas. My bad.
No, dogs. Kansas City people here get upset when I say from Kansas City. No, you don't have Kansas City. You're from Kansas. Okay, whatever.
All right.
Kansas.
So, and you know, we are giving Harry all the props, but I just want to throw a shout out to all the black men who love black women too, and do a good job, like my husband, like Marshall Allen,
my father,
and Ida's dad. Okay, moving on. Let's move on to, I think we'll just do one more, then we will have to wrap up. So do you guys want to do hashtag joiner Lucas or hashtag Grammys?
Grammys?
Let's do hashtag Grammys.
Grammys.
Okay, real quick. What is going on with the Grammys? What's the news? Ida.
Cardi B is nominated for 2 Grammys. She's nominated for, what is it, Song of the Year
and Rap Performance.
Yeah. I don't know how they vote for that, for the performance, but she better win. Mm-hmm. Who else is nominated? SZA.
Oh, yeah.
Khalid. Mm-hmm. Childish Gambino.
Kendrick.
Kendrick Lamar. Well, we knew that. Mm-hmm. And
Jay-Z.
Yeah, and there's no white men in the category for what album of the year. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. The first time in what, 18 years? Mm-hmm.
So yep. Amazing.
Yeah. Voting and also a tweet that I saw, a black woman hasn't won album of the year in nearly 20 years.
So this is my problem. You know, as much as we're making noise about album of the year having these like 4 black men, 3 black men. Is Bruno Mars black? Like what?
He's Hawaiian.
Okay, so 3 black men plus Lord plus Bruno Mars.
And where did Lord come from?
We'll claim Bruno because
I don't know,
he
but
does
I heard
black
her
music.
Album was actually good.
But what about Rihanna?
Her album didn't make the date or something.
Oh!
Yeah.
But where are the black women?
There are so many.
You know, I was watching the American Music Awards and there were
no
black women on stage.
SZA should be nominated for album of the year because that was, I heard that everywhere. Uh-huh. And the fact that her songs that weren't even her singles were played continuously.
And they won awards, like they went platinum and they
but
weren't
then,
even singles.
Again, I don't think that it made the date.
The date cut.
But when did Jay-Z release his though?
But this is album of the year, not R&B album of the year. So this is album of the year. Do you still
but
think
still,
that SZA
everyone,
should have been in the album of
to
the year?
It, I think, yeah. Okay. But, or at least Khalid. Like, everyone listens to Khalid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's already nominated for 5 Grammys, mm-hmm. and he's only 19.
Mm-hmm. Marshall?
He doesn't know.
He doesn't have... Marshall is not... I should let the audience know that when it comes to music,
popular
movies,
culture.
Pop culture... Marshall is not the one, but thankfully I have some great support on this panel for pop culture.
Yeah, if y'all say it's black. That's what's up.
Did I just snort on air?
Deja. Oh. Deja, what do you think of, other than the fact that there are no black women, mm-hmm. who are you guys looking to win this category? Kendrick, Jay-Z, Childish Gambino, Bruno Mars, and Lord. Who would you like to see?
I don't like Lord. I haven't liked her since Lollapalooza when I was a teen. I think she's played out. Not really a Bruno Mars fan. I would have to go with, I mean, just like Issa Rae said, like I'm rooting for all the people who are black. I don't care.
So anyone,
anyone can have it. I mean, all those people have so many awards as is. Like, mm-hmm. give it to anyone. I don't mind.
I was just listening to a podcast yesterday, and they were talking about who they wanted to win and who they think will win, and it's two very different things.
Of course.
Because I think Bruno Mars is going to win.
Who would you recommend to Marshall to listen to? Like, if we could get him to sit down and listen to any one of these artists.
Have you heard Jay-Z's album?
No.
Oh, listen to that.
you need to listen to at least the story of OJ.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've heard that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
They went into a larger conversation about like anime or cartooning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talking about like the mm-hmm. the residuals of the menstrual ideology and concept in current, past, modern, and contemporary like cartoons. You know, so. I did hear that one because mm-hmm. of that analysis and commentary that I could read.
But also exciting because if you look at the albums, 444, what was Childish Gambino's
Awaken My Love.
Awaken My Love and then...
Damn.
Can we say that? Damn. Mm-hmm. Damn.
It's the name of an album.
Right. Each of them are very politically charged. Mm-hmm.
Each
of them are each very
them are,
unapologetically
yeah.
black.
Yes.
So again, any of them, take it away.
I kind of want Childish Gambino to win.
Because it's so interesting.
Yeah.
Because
the
he's such like somebody, yeah. I love the term that they called him, a Renaissance man.
Yeah.
Like he's a writer, he's an actor, he's a executive producer.
And
he's
successful in all of those things.
Successful in all of them. So
he's
I
amazing.
Think that would be great
yeah.
for him
comedian,
to win.
Comedian. Yeah. I mean, all of it. Okay. So I think we shall wrap up. We are heading off back to Black Studies to go engage in a conversation about the Libyan slave trade. So we are about this life. And we'll see you all. We hope that you will join us next time on Hashtag Black. Thank you.